Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
He was kind of the guy coming in today, you know, paying attention last night. I wouldn't have been, you know, surprised if, you know, he was someone that was selected at the, you know, towards the latter part of the first round, and you started seeing the corners go early today like we thought would happen, and a few of the receivers. And, you know, you just kind of pay attention, talking with a few teams. But he was different than – he wasn't in a group. He was one of the, I would say, probably the target coming in here this morning. We're just feeling like, you know, this would be – the vision's clear, and certainly that we felt really good about his talent.
Good morning, Acadiana, and welcome to this Monday edition of RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and you're listening to 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, and we're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. We got a lot to get to on today's show, but if you want to give us a call, do not hesitate. Pick up the phone, dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111, the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. Coming up on today's show, we get our good friend Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details. He's going to give us updates on LSU recruiting. There was some movement over the weekend. They picked up some commitments. Now, according to certain recruiting services, they're the number one class in 2020. That's right, your LSU Tigers. We'll talk about that. We'll also get Jarrett's thoughts on the draft. We'll also have Jeff Palermo on from the LSU Radio Network, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. He'll join us to kick off the third hour. LSU baseball had a bit of a setback to start their weekend series at Alabama and then needed everything they had in their belly to get out of Tuscaloosa with a series win as the Crimson Tide kind of charged back on them on Sunday. We'll talk to Jeff about that coming up to start the third hour. And then we'll have, from the sporting news, Bill Bender will be joining us also in the third hour to recap this past weekend's NFL draft. Plus, there'll be a Louisiana wrap-up. We'll recap LSU, Cajuns baseball series, as well as the Raging Cajuns softball getting yet another sweep. But we're going to start off with the draft here on RP3 and Company. We knew that they were not going to stand pat, that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and Sean Payton were going to make some type of move. We didn't know what it was going to be, but we knew it was going to be some type of move that they were going to be making. Now, they did not get themselves back into the first round, and I honestly don't blame them for that because of how some other teams drafted. A lot of quality players fell to the second round. Players that a lot of folks didn't feel were going to drop into the second round. We'll get to Greedy Williams falling out of the first round all the way down into the middle of the second shortly. But there were a lot of quality players that did not get taken in the first round of this past weekend's NFL draft. So you had a lot of quality depth, and it was a deep draft to begin with. Lots of depth on the defensive line. Lots of depth at tight end, wide receiver, cornerback. If you had a position that you really were kind of targeting, this was the draft that you could find at least a reliable backup player, possibly even a starter. And the Saints did just that. They stood pat. They didn't overdo it. They waited until they felt that they could make a move, and they finally did. On day two, they moved up from pick 62, which was the only pick that they had through the first four rounds of this draft at that time. They made some wheels and deals. They jump up from pick 62 all the way up to 48. So they move up 14 spots in the second round because of one gentleman in particular. And that was Eric McCoy, the center out of Texas A&M. And the great thing about what the Saints did, they addressed a need that they had. Remember, they got Eason in free agency. They poached him away from the Minnesota Vikings. But Eason's a more natural guard than he is a center. But they went ahead and hedged their bets and said, look, Max Unger has kind of caught us off guard here with his retirement, not only from us, but from the National Football League. Now we don't have a franchise center in place. Let's go out and sign a guy that we can have some versatility with. And that's what they got. They got Eason in free agency. He can play guard. He can play center. He's played both. Maybe they move. There's talk about maybe moving Eason to the guard spot. Maybe Will Clapp could be developed enough, the former LSU Tiger, to take over at the center position. He was a late-round draft pick last year. Could they depend on him to develop quickly enough to take over there at the center spot, have Eason man the guard position, and then they could take Andres Pete and possibly trade him for draft assets? Well, they didn't need to do that. They take Eric McCoy, the center out of Texas A&M, a guy who is rated by most draft experts as a first-round pick. He had first-round value. A lot of people had him going in the first round. But because of the depth of this draft and because certain other teams made, let's just say, questionable decisions, which happens every year, a quality player like that falls. And now you have Max Unger's replacement. Most people believe that Eric McCoy has the skill set and has the ability to be a plug-and-play starter from day one. So right there, if you're the New Orleans Saints, you've already won your draft. You have a plug-and-play guy as a rookie. And now look at your line. You didn't trade Andres Pete, so now you're going to make Eric McCoy, he's going to be your center. You can have Eason over at guard. And now what do you do with Andres Pete? Well, now Andres Pete, who was a Pro Bowler last year, maybe you have him and Eason battle it out in camp for one of those guard spots, or maybe you move Andres Pete back to tackle, which he came in the league as. We've talked about Teron Armstead's injury problems, the fact that we don't know how much longer he's going to play in the National Football League. He's always banged up. He's always nicked up. And there's not been a season where Teron Armstead's played a full season. So now the Saints, with one pick, one great free agent move, with the signing of Eason, poaching him away from the Minnesota Vikings, and then drafting Eric McCoy in the second round, have shored up their offensive line. Because now you're going to take a guy who was a Pro Bowler last year in Andres Pete, and now he can be your versatile guy. He can now be moved around playing tackle, playing guard, wherever you want to line him up. Hell, maybe you decide during camp if he's battling Eason and you don't think he's going to win the job, maybe you trade him away to get another player. due to an injury, something like that. Now you have all these options if you're the Saints because of smart moves in free agency, because of smart approach to drafting. They didn't reach for the young man. He fell to the second round. This is a first-round talent that falls. You get even additional value because of that. So they shore up the offensive line. But they weren't done. The kid that they took out of Florida with the 105th overall pick there in the fourth round, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Once again, here's another value pick by Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and Sean Payton. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson can play. He's a little undersized. That's the knock on him. He's a little small, but he's a versatile safety. He can line up at corner. He can line up at safety. He can be a nickel guy. This is a guy that a lot of people thought should have been an early third-round pick, maybe even a late second. He falls all the way to the fourth. Saints didn't have a fourth-round pick. They did Willen and Dillon. They got into the fourth round. They got their guy that they wanted, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Did they need help at defensive back? Not really. You got Lattimore. You got your two corners, right? You got Marshawn Lattimore. You got Eli Apple. You got Patrick Robinson coming back off of injury. At safety, you got Von Bell. Williams. But now you get a guy, a quality guy that can be a backup at one of those positions. Because we do know that the Saints have struggled with injuries on the back end of their defense in the secondary. So you can never have enough guy. And here's a guy that can be a special teams player for you. And he gives you depth in the defensive back end. Oh, and you just got him in the fourth round. Now, the rest of the guys that they picked up in the later rounds, will they make an impact? I don't know. Usually when you're drafting this late, these are guys that are going to be coming to training camp with you. These are going to be guys that are going to possibly be on your scout team. Look, Marcus Colston being a six-round draft pick and then turning into the franchise leader in receptions and receiving yardage, that's the Cinderella story. Most of these cats that get taken in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round, they provide your team with depth. They give those spots on the special teams gunners unit. That's where you find these guys. These are guys that are on the scout team. They're quality players. They make a living. But they're scout team guys. They're backups. Sometimes backups to the backups. And this is where you spend your late round picks on. And if one of these guys ends up being a diamond in the rough and turns into something great, well, that's awesome, right? That's just lagniappe. You're not really having to worry about anything. You're not taking a huge chance because you're not spending a lot of money because of where you're drafting them. You're just not. So will Saquon Hampton, the safety taken out of Rutgers with the 177th overall pick there in the sixth round, will at least Mack, the tight end out of Notre Dame with the 231st overall pick, and will Caden Ellis, the linebacker out of Idaho, will you be hearing their names called during the season? Maybe.
I mean, one of those guys could be the next Steve Gleason.
And we talked about the tight end position, right, Cody? We talked about how that's that you were hoping maybe they'd get a guy that they can develop young. Max got the right attitude. He's pumped up about being a New Orleans Saint.
Unlike Dwayne Haskins, who does not seem pleased to be.
That man was not happy. That man was not happy about Jones being selected to the Giants. But Mac, look, you brought in Jared Cook to be the starting tight end. Josh Hill's going to be your backup. Could this kid develop as your third tight end this year? And maybe in a couple years, once Cook's contract is up, could at least Mac be the next guy in line? Maybe. But it does give you depth. It gives you depth on your special teams with Saquon Hampton. It gives you depth at tight end by having Elise Mack, a seventh rounder. And then Idaho linebacker Caden Elise. All in all, a good draft for a team that didn't have many picks to begin with. They get a guy that can be a plug-and-play starter from day one on the offensive line. That gives them some versatility now. Whether they want to keep Andrus Pete to help with depth or possibly trade him for assets before the start of the season. And they get guys for the special teams, and they get a backup safety. All in all, for a team that was one terrible call away from going to the Super Bowl, this team did need a lot. Terrific job, once again, it appears, by Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and Sean Payton. Bravo to the Saints. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk about LSU. Only three players drafted? Say what? We'll talk about that and more right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, and we're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. We led off the show talking about the NFL draft, in particular the New Orleans Saints having themselves a heck of a draft with minimal picks, selecting the center out of Texas A&M, Eric McCoy, in the second round, trading up to do so. They found Max Unger's replacement, also picking up a backup safety and special teamer in Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in the fourth round out of Florida, and then adding depth with three late-round picks in the sixth and seventh round with Saquon Hampton out of Rutgers, Elise Mack, tight end out of Notre Dame, and the seventh round, and then Caden Ellis, or Elise, out of Idaho. Linebacker. But LSU started off strong, right? Devin White, first round on Thursday night, fifth overall pick, taken to Tampa Bay. We're thinking, hey, here we go. Greedy Williams is going to get taken in the first round. Greedy Williams did not get selected in the first round. Greedy will get taken real early in the second round. Greedy Williams wasn't selected real early in the second round either. For some reason, and I'm confused by this, but for some reason, a guy who was an All-American and considered the best cover corner possibly in this draft or in the country fell all the way to the 46th overall pick. Say what? But the Cleveland Browns said, thank you very much. We are trying. It feels like the Browns are trying to make Cleveland LSU North with their free agent moves and trades. A year ago, they brought in Jarvis Landry. Earlier this year, they traded for Odell Beckham Jr. Now they've drafted Greedy Williams. So Greedy goes number in the second round, 46th overall pick to the Cleveland Browns. By the way, he said on a teleconference with members of the media that the Browns are going to the Super Bowl. Love the young man's confidence. Factory of sadness to LSU North. Factory of sadness to LSU North. Also, there in the fourth round, Foster Moreau. That's right. The LSU tight end, rarely used as a pass catcher because that portion of the playbook had been lost the entire time Foster was there. I assume just someone stole it. One of the wide receivers stole it because they didn't want Foster to get any shine. Foster Moreau gets taken with the 137th overall pick there in the fourth round to the Oakland Raiders. So Foster gets a chance to show what he can do at the next level. And then that was it for LSU draft picks. Other guys from the state of Louisiana got love. Cody Ford out of Pineville. Played at Oklahoma. He got selected in the second round, first round value. Drops down to pick number 38. He gets selected. Irv Smith Jr., the young man out of Brother Martin, whose father played for the New Orleans Saints, the tight end out of Alabama. He got taken in the second round as well by the Minnesota Vikings with the 50th overall pick. Jalen Ferguson, the NCAA sack leader out of Louisiana Tech. He got taken in the third round, 85th overall pick by the Baltimore Ravens. So state guys did get some love. But some names that did not get drafted. Ed Alexander, defensive tackle at LSU, did not get drafted. John Battle, the safety at LSU, did not get drafted. Garrett Brumfield, the guard at LSU, did not get drafted. Nick Brissett, who we had on the show Friday, young man right there out of Baton Rouge, he did not get drafted. B.J. Blunt, the All-American at McNeese State, did not get drafted as well, non-LSU guys. Jazz Ferguson, the All-American at Northwestern State, who started off his career at LSU, did not get drafted. But it didn't take long for those guys to find a home. B.J. Blunt was one of the first of those guys to find a home. He's going to the Redskins. They signed him to an undrafted rookie free agent deal. So the former McNeese Cowboy is headed to nation's capital to try to earn a roster spot. John Battle signed with the New York Jets. He'll be reunited with one of his former teammates. So the man they call Batman signed with the New York Jets as an undrafted free agent. Jazz Ferguson signed his undrafted rookie free agent deal with the Seattle Seahawks. They need wide receiver depth. Garrett Brumfield signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's a good pick, right? You watch Brum play, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. It's a good pick for him. Good pick for them, too. And then Nick Brissett. He had to wait till yesterday. Goes undrafted. Where's Nick Brissett go? The New England Patriots. Because Bill Belichick loves him, some LSU guys, and some LSU running backs. So Nick Brissett gets to go to the defending Super Bowl champion. So not too bad for him. But yeah, draft is over. LSU finishes with three selections. It's lowest since 2005. Lowest amount of Tigers drafted since 2005. We got to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network.
Looking mighty fine this morning, Raymond, I might say, for the television.
Thank you. I have that not wearing a hat at the angle of Prison Rodeo is really paying off for my complexion.
I'm not sunburnt here, am I, yesterday? Because yesterday I spent the entire LSU baseball game.
Okay.
I watched it on my phone.
Nice.
On a small little, we'll just call it an outdoor table.
Okay.
From the inside. We built a pool yesterday. And it's one of those, it's got just a liner wall, but it's got the metal,
you know,
braces that go all, it's a nice fancy pool. And it took all day. And it wasn't like the building of the pool. That only took a couple of hours. But then it was the filling of the pool. It was the putting together of the ladder. I was trying to convince someone to call the fire department.
Now, was this pool for yourself, for you and your family at your house?
Yes.
We will have this discussion again in about 3 months when you talk to me about the regret of you having said pool.
Well, my parents bought it for Kaysen or for us for Easter. It was the Easter gift.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? So
wow.
So we put it together this weekend because we wanted it. It's one of those ones that has a pump on it. So hopefully that'll help, you know, keep it a little clean. And then we've got all the treatment things for it. I have to go pick up some little pH strips
on the
way home today to make sure before I throw the kid in it later. But yeah, yesterday was fun.
I just have a visual of you going, go play, and just throwing the child into the pool.
Well, the crazy thing is, he has a T-ball game today. It's the first T-ball game for the PC Direct Cubbies tonight. Yeah, we're going to be rocking it. We're ready to rock tonight. So Kaylee yesterday was telling me, oh, we can't let him swim when he gets home from school tomorrow. He's got a T-ball game and everything. So we're just going to have to promise him this and that, blah, blah, blah. I looked at him. I was like, Kaylee. And he wasn't home yesterday. Kaylee, the six-year-old inside of me is pissed at you right now for trying to not let him swim. I was like, when I get home from work tomorrow, I was like, I got to put him in the pool. I'll put him in the pool for like an hour. Take him out around 4, and then he'll be ready for his game. It'll be fine.
I'm surprised you didn't go ahead and get yourself in the pool yesterday while the LSU baseball game was going on.
Oh, I was.
Probably trying to drink away after you saw them try to give the game away in the ninth inning.
The only reason
you're feeling really confident about your Tigers right now.
The only reason I wasn't just like steam coming out of my ears come the later innings of that game 3 yesterday was because I was knee deep in really cold water. If I wasn't standing in the pool that was filling and was like, I would have been steamed out the top of my head. I know you'll break it down here for us in a second, but my initial thought is I appreciate how Fontenot was on the mound, and it was all you, buddy. He was either going to win or lose that game. There was no one in the bullpen. It reminded me of kind of, you know, regionals, super regionals last year where it was Todd Peterson or bust when it was, you know, time to close the game.
Mineri put it on his shoulders and said, hey, and you have to go out there and you have to get the job done.
And he made you sweat.
Oh, God.
But he got it done, I guess.
The whole team made you sweat, though, right? I mean, here's the thing.
It's so weird.
They get out of Tuscaloosa, and I'm stunned. Look, the Alabama fan in me chuckles a little bit by this, okay? Because I know what my baseball team is, and they're the worst team in the Southeastern Conference. It's not even close. They are the worst team in the conference. Pitching, hitting, managing, water boys, the whole nine, they are absolutely the worst team in the Southeastern Conference. And to see mighty LSU struggle against the worst team in the SEC makes the fan in me chuckle. As the guy who covers LSU, what the hell? Like, I don't understand why this is happening.
Well, let me... For LSU fans out there, I can maybe, you know, the Friday night loss, that is...
Zach Hess looked awful.
It seems to be, I mean, par for the course almost, which is terrible. But that Friday night game has given LSU bugaboos all year. Zach Hess even said on Saturday, I think during the game, he was talking with the commentators.
Yeah.
And he said that he went out there and he threw his best pitch at that moment and they hit it 500 feet. He said, and they put good swings on him. He didn't make any excuses. That's fine. You take that loss on Friday, it is what it is. Saturday was a fine baseball game for LSU.
You had to love what you saw from Eric Walker.
Yeah, Friday was perfect.
Because Eric pitched Eric pitched 5 2/3 on Saturday, got you the win, okay? A career high 9 strikeouts.
And his career high before that, or his season high before that, I believe was 5.
So I like what I keep seeing out of Eric Walker over the last month. He's getting stronger. Look, Eric was never the strongest pitcher on the mound, right? He just wasn't. That's not his stuff. That's not his game. But he gets you a quality start on Saturday to even up the series. Landon Morseau gave you a quality start yesterday. He was okay. He wasn't great. He wasn't as good as Eric was. But he gave you some quality innings. The bullpen got shaky. So they escaped Tuscaloosa, taking 2 of 3. And 6-1 loss on Friday, 5-2 win on Saturday. They escape on Sunday, 5-4. As you mentioned, Fontenot was able to get Keith Holcomb, Alabama's DH, who had homered on Saturday. He got him out, threw a fastball past Holcomb's bat. Holcomb threw his bat down in disgust, and LSU escaped with the 5-4 win. LSU is 29-16 overall. They're now tied with Ole Miss, Georgia, and Mississippi State for third overall in the SEC standings. behind Arkansas and Vandy, who are tied for the top. And they're behind Arkansas in the SEC West standings.
And can I say, to try to look at it from the other side of the coin, if, you know, LSU loses Friday, they win Saturday in a great game we were talking about. It's one of the better games we've seen LSU play.
Especially
overall.
With Walker. Yeah.
And then Sunday, they go into the eighth inning, into the bottom of the eighth inning, leading 5-2.
You're thinking of three runs should be enough.
And then it becomes 5-4, and now we're sitting here talking about how they escaped, which they absolutely did because, well, the bases loaded when he struck out that guy. There was runners on the corners or something like that. But if you can take away Fontenot's shaky performance, you know, LSU still wins this game by a couple of runs. Now, that didn't happen. That didn't happen is what – so
I see what you're saying.
But this Sunday game could have looked a lot like the Saturday game if it were not for the last two innings where LSU gives up a single run in the eighth and the ninth.
And Marceau pitched the longest. It was his longest outing since February against Bryant. Okay. So, because he's been dealing with the dreaded arm soreness, which apparently is like the plague for LSU.
Well, good news for that. Marceau only threw 82 pitches.
Correct.
So hopefully that'll be good on that, maybe.
And LSU doesn't have a midweek game to worry about, right? So they can rest up because Ole Miss is coming to town to the box, okay?
And they're going
to
bring those light blue jerseys, don't you worry.
And they've been playing at a high level. And as I said, you know, they're tied for third with LSU overall in the SEC standings.
So this series might mean a little something in the SEC standings.
There'll
is
be
that
some juice
saying?
In the box, is yeah. It's good that they took two of three. And I agree with you, Cody. If it wasn't for some bullpen issues there.
I don't want to discredit that, though, because
no,
did happen. But I'm just trying to, you know.
What do you do with Zach Hess? Like, and it is.
It seems kind of obvious, right, what you do with Zach Hess, huh?
Oh, you put him in the bullpen is what
right,
you should do.
That's what you should do.
And that's what Paul wanted to do last week. And
correct.
That's what he may still do. But it is the end of April.
Yeah, tomorrow's payday.
It's the end of April. And we don't know who the Friday night starter is for LSU moving forward. We don't know if Zach Hess is a starting pitcher.
Oh, we know.
And we don't know about the bullpen. It's the end of April. Did you think when we started off coming back from Media Day that it would be the end of April, Cody, and we would still have these big question marks, questions about the bullpen, questions about is there enough healthy pitchers on LSU's roster to even pitch due to all this arm soreness? And is Zach Hess, where's he going to be? Did you think we'd still be asking these questions right now?
One out of the three was a possibility in my mind. The one being, is Zach Hess a starting pitcher? That question I think was going to, unless he came out and was like, you know, SEC pitcher of the year sort of caliber type stuff where he was winning, you know, almost all of his Friday night starts in that. Unless that happened, I had a feeling that we were going to be wondering most of the season whether Zach Hess is better suited for LSU to be a starter or come out of the bullpen, whatever have you. I mean, it's obvious now he needs to come out of the bullpen, but the talent he has, you know, you got to use him where you can if you don't have anybody else to start.
Correct.
That's what you got to do. Again, I'm trying to look at, like, because you're right, the pitching on this team worries me, and I don't know what they're going to be able to do. Piecing it together is not going to work. What is promising, though, for this team at the plate is not just Saul Garza, who's been coming on as of late, Kay Beloso, who seems to be able to not miss the ball at this point.
Cabrera had a home run over
right.
the weekend.
That the announcer for Alabama thought was foul. It was one of the weirdest things. When Cabrera hit it, he was like, oh, Cabrera belts this one way foul off to the side. And, like, the kid for Bama tries to leap the wall and rob the home run. Like, and I was very confused when he made that call.
Someone wasn't looking up at the actual
that's
play.
That's what I think. I think that's what happened.
He just heard it. He just looked. He's like, oh, it's
foul. Ball. And it's foul. Like right center field. It's not even in right field. It's in.
This team's terrible.
But
I'm not giving yet. Giving four.
On top of all that, you've got your guys. The Planets is doing fine. Watson, blah, blah, blah. Who the hell is Gavin Dugas? And why is he just crushing the ball now? They put this kid in, I think it was like two or three games ago, maybe in a midweek matchup somewhere or something like that. And he all of a sudden he's getting in the lineup. And this kid, I mean, came through in a big at bat on in that Sunday game. It was a big 2-run single that put LSU up. Like,
I'm not worried about the lineup. The lineup is so deep, and now they got guys healthy. Cabrera looks to be healthy. You know what you're going to get out of Duplantis. Zach Watson's getting healthy as well. So, look, your best hitters are getting healthy. You're having Josh Smith. You're having Cade Bellosa. Right. Look, you do got step. You have all these guys that are stepping
up.
Josh
Smith drew an intentional walk yesterday.
So, I'm not worried about the lineup.
Which is good, because I'd say 3 weeks ago to a month ago, we were sitting right here and discussing how the pitching and the batting was an issue, and they needed to get it figured out.
Well, and that was also Watson was banged up, Cabrera right, was banged during, up. So they had good. The injury issues. And like you mentioned, Garza's getting healthier as the season progresses.
And he's
because he wasn't
now.
Able to start catching early in the season. So they had Mathis behind the plate. So they've progressed nicely as a lineup, and they're starting to hit their stride. That's great. But not only is Zach Hess, I worry about what they're going to do with that. And once again, you got good outings this past weekend from Eric Walker and Marceau. Moving forward, is Hill going to be your guy? Or Henry? One of the two freshmen?
You would hope it'd be Henry.
And you move Zach to the bullpen. But here's my other issue. So, Paul Maneri says this. They were entering the final inning leading 5-3. So Fondo trots in from the bullpen behind right field. This is Maneri's quote. Quote, I bring in our best strike thrower, and he hits the kid with the first pitch of the inning. Alabama would load the bases with one out. Fondo didn't have control of his curveball. And Alan Dunn had to visit the mound. Bend, but don't break. He was able to get out of the jam. But Todd Peterson's been wildly inconsistent as well out of the bullpen. Fondo has not been stellar. Can Zach Hess return to a closer's mentality? Can he become that guy again after being the starter all year? Maybe. You hope.
Come out, throw the ball 107 miles an hour.
And if you add Zach to the bullpen, maybe you take the approach, okay, let's say it's Marceau, Henry, and Walker. Those are your three starters, with maybe Hilliard thrown in there too if he can stay healthy, even though he did not look great the last time he was out there. And you worry about your arm soreness. Well, you got a guy that used to be a starter. Maybe he can eat up innings for you, Zach Hess, right?
Mikael Hilliard serves that similar role.
Mikael Hilliard can serve that similar role. So now you got two guys. So maybe your starters only have to pitch four, maybe five innings. You have the other guys come in, eat up innings, and then you hand it over to Fondo. I don't know. Look, at the end of the day, they get out of Tuscaloosa. They escape Tuscaloosa with right. two wins.
I mean, if you tell me what we had Sunday, Marceau, five innings. Then they go to Vittmeyer. Then they go to Beck. Then they go to Fontenot. That sounds all right to me. It didn't work out that way, but that sounds all right to me.
That sounds okay.
And if you throw Hess as another option in there, where Matthew Beck threw 2 2/3 innings. If you take Beck now and he throws an inning, maybe you get an inning out of Zach Hess, and now right. and there you go. I don't know.
But it's the pitching and the arm soreness and the fact that every time they make strides with a guy, all of a sudden his arm hurts.
It's like you said last week. It makes you wonder about some kind of training regimen or something that's going, I don't know. Or maybe bad luck.
It's curious. But they're not the only team that's happening to.
Right.
So this is a thing that's happening across collegiate baseball with the arm soreness. Is it that these guys have too much wear and tear from travel ball, and that's the only sport that they play, and they're pitching too much throughout the entire year, that when they get to college, all of a sudden their arm starts to fall off? I don't know. It's curious, though. But at the end of the day, LSU survives a scare from the Crimson Tide. They'll return to action this coming weekend at the Box with a three-game series against Ole Miss. Pivotal three-game series, not only in the SEC West standings, but the overall SEC standings. You can listen to all three games live right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, we'll wrap up the first hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. We just got wrapping up and talking a little bit about LSU baseball escaping Tuscaloosa by winning 2 out of 3. They maintain their pace in the SEC standings by doing so. A team that did not have as good of a weekend were the University of Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns. The losing streak is now 7. Swept again, this time at home, to the Texas State Bobcats. 10-8 loss, took care of business on Sunday, completed the sweep for Texas State there at Russo Park. UL pitchers walked 10 batters and hit 3 others. I'll say it again. UL pitchers walked 10 batters and hit 3 others, which means they put 13 guys on base for free.
If you did all of that in one inning, you would let the other team score 9 runs and they wouldn't have to hit the ball.
There you go. I was told there'd be no math. Thank God Cody's here.
Well, I'm trying to get 3 guys on base, and then you did it. You put 10 other guys on base after that. That's 9 runs, I believe.
On top of that, Texas State had 7 hits.
That's a recipe for...
So you're lucky they only scored 10 runs. Yeah. I mean, honestly.
Look, I'll tell it to you this way, Cajuns fans. And again, I owe a lot to that university. I pull for UL through and through. I've said it for months now, almost since the midway point of the season. It all comes down to the conference tournament. It's all that matters now. Whether you're playing, whether you go into the conference.
It's been that way. You've been saying that for like 3 weeks.
Right. Whether you go into the conference tournament on a 13-game losing streak or a 10-game winning streak, at the end of the day, it does not matter. Momentum is real, but you can't see it. This UL baseball team needs to win the conference tournament at period point. You know, exclamation mark. And that's a hot take from me there. Watch out.
The Cajuns offense collected 6 hits in the 7th inning alone. Hey, there you go. Got the bats. Only 1 shy of Texas State's total for the entire game. UL got 4 runs to pull within 9-8, but it would get no closer. It's real simple. This is what Tony Robichaux had to say afterwards. It's real simple. We hit 300 for the weekend. And we out-hit them 13-7 today. But with 7 hits, they've got 10 runs. Mathematically, you can't do that. But you can when you walk people and hit people. Tony don't play. He's going to say it like what it is.
How pissed he must be.
The Cajuns are now 20-27 overall. 8-13 in Sunbelt play. They lost their 7th straight and were swept in back-to-back Sunbelt series for the first time since 2009. This is the worst season in a decade. Okay? And when it's all said and done, this may be the worst season of Tony's tenure there at UL. And it doesn't get any easier. You know why?
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Because this weekend they go on the road and have to play Coastal Carolina for a 3-game set. The Chanticleers are not the team that you want to be facing when you are struggling. 7-game losing streak. Hopefully the Ragin' Cajuns will be able to turn things around come this weekend. They only have 1 more home series there at the Teague next weekend versus Georgia State, and then they wrap up the regular season at ULM on the road before the conference tournament in Conway, South Carolina this year. So, another disappointing weekend for the Ragin' Cajuns. That's going to do it for the first hour here on RP3 and Company. Louisiana wrap-up is next. I'll lead off the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson,
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now. Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up.
It's hour number two of RP3 and Company on this Monday. Happy Monday to you, Acadiana. We're coming to you live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I don't know if we did one of these last week, Raymond, a Louisiana Wrap-Up. I'm a little out of sorts here. Let me shake off that rust. Get rid of this arm soreness here, and let me see where we can throw ourselves around the boot. And now I sound kind of dumb because we're actually going to leave the boot for our first Louisiana Wrap-Up stop. But of course, it always comes back to the boot. So this will have to do with the Louisiana guy, won't it, Raymond? We're out in Louisville. Tell me what's up.
That's right. Former Raging Cajun star Blake Trahan plays for the Louisville Bats. He was named. Has been named.
Wait, he plays in Louisville for the Louisville Bats?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Because it's like Louisville Slugger.
Oh, nice, yes. The Louisville Bat. Yes, I'm trying to, I'm efforting. Sorry.
Is the internet failing you right now?
A little bit.
It happens. This is what we do here. We call it a filibuster, Raymond. Filibuster.
Nice. So I just want to touch base on what he's been able to do so far this year. And Blake, obviously, we know, played for the Raging Cajuns. He played well. He's one of their better players. The right-handed shortstop so far this season is having himself a heck of a game. Yes, the Louisville Bats, by the way, their logo is amazing. I need one of those. The 25-year-old is batting .250 on the year. He's still out there playing. He just wrapped up a series where he went 3-for-4.
There you go.
Went 3-for-4 in a game, got himself a hit, and he's still in the minor leagues. He's still trying to get to the big leagues. But look, he looks like he's turning things around once again. Lake Charles native, played at UL, and he had himself a weekend where he went started off the weekend going 3-for-4, and that increased his batting average. Now he's batting around .250. It's the AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds. So Blake Trahan, he's had an up and down year. Wanted to give him a shout out. He was batting around .200 like a month ago, okay? And when you're batting around .200 a month ago to start the season, you're at the AAA level. A lot of times that means that you're going to be demoted down to AA. But it appears that Blake has turned it around. Remember, he won one of the Rawlings Gold Gloves last year.
Yeah.
Okay, so last fall, he had such a great year. Look, he's not known for his bat. You're going to get what you're going to get out of the shortstop, Blake Trahan. It's going to be a terrific glove work. That said,
I mean, let's not forget, he appeared in 11 major league games last year.
That's correct. So, but the bat is struggling. But Blake, after starting off the year batting under .200 there for the AAA ball club of the Cincinnati Reds, now has climbed his average all the way up to .250, still has the great glove work. So he's trending in the right direction as the minor league season progresses. We'll keep an eye on Blake Trahan. Hopefully he can keep things going there in the right direction and maybe get called back up to the big leagues.
And I want to just comment on the multiple layers on which the Louisville Bats name works, because not only is it Louisville Slugger,
yes,
they play at Louisville Slugger Field, apparently.
That's
correct. I'm looking at that. But it is not the Louisville Bats, as in the Louisville baseball bats. They are the Louisville Bats, and their logo and their mascot is an actual bat, like with wings,
yes,
like Batman. It's the eyes on Louisville on their jersey are dotted with bats. This is amazing. that works on many layers.
Yeah. You're welcome for that,
so by well done to Blake Trahan and the Louisville Bats. Let's keep rolling along. Let's come back to the boot now for our next stop. Something really, really cool happened over the weekend here in Lafayette, specifically at the Cajun Dome, Raymundo. What happened?
Something happened at the Cajun Dome?
I believe it did.
New Orleans' own, the Filipino Flash himself.
Wait, are we talking fighting?
Yes. Yes, we're talking fighting. But no, not the Filipino Flash. He displayed his hardware, too, as well. He became a victory there over the weekend. The Cajun Dome was the site of championship boxing and Regis. I've always struggled pronouncing his last name.
Progress. I believe it's Progress.
Regis Progress from New Orleans won the semifinal match. He picked up a belt, winning the WBA title at 140 pounds. He did it by sixth-round stoppage. They stopped the fight because he was mauling the kid in the sixth round.
Wow.
He becomes the first world champion from New Orleans. New Orleans' first world champion in boxing in 54 years. And it happened right here in the Cajun Dome on Saturday night. He's the first from NOLA to win a fully recognized world title since Willie Pastriano lost the WBA, WBC, and lineal titles back in 1965. And he's just going to keep going. Reggie, I think a lot of them just call him.
Yeah, I think so.
He has another bout coming up because he won the semifinals of
it's a tournament.
It's like a tournament, so he gets to move on to the championship round and possibly pick himself another belt. But tremendous right there for the Cajun Dome. I was unable to attend, but the world famous CD said that it was pretty electric and pretty awesome to check out there in the Cajun Dome, and that the local fans came out. So congrats to them, and congrats to the Cajun Dome for putting on such a good show. But congratulations to Reggie for becoming New Orleans' first recognized world champion and boxer in 54 years.
And let us not forget the incredible tattoo that one Reggie has on his chest. It's the New Orleans skyline. It's got the Superdome arena.
Did you say tattoo?
The tattoo, yes.
Oh, I love that.
Just on his chest. He is repping the boot big time. So shout out to your guy Reggie there for moving on in the tournament. Speaking of tournaments, Raymond, I think we had a culmination of a tournament over the weekend down in Sulphur. I want to give a shout out to the Catholic High Point Coupee Hornets bringing home the state championship.
There it is.
But yeah, take us down to Sulphur, Raymond. Tell us what you got.
There it is, my man. So we had multiple teams reach Sulphur. We had a lot of them on last week, right? We had LCA, we had STM, we had Church Point, we had Beauchamp. We had a lot of the teams representing the area that were there trying to bring home the hardware, but there was only one that could. There was only one that brought home the hardware, Mr. Schutz, and that was in Division III, the Notre Dame Lady Pios. It wasn't even close. I just want to tell you what
that's the big division, by the way.
The big division, yes.
Just in case you know.
So Notre Dame was the number one overall seed. They got a bye. Quarterfinals, they beat Ascension Episcopal 14-0.
That's a run rule.
Then they meet Riverside Academy in the semifinals there in Sulphur at Frash Park. 15-0.
That's another run rule.
They didn't win the championship game in a run rule fashion.
Thank goodness.
It actually went the seven innings, but they took care of Holy Savior Menard out of Alexandria 7-3.
So it wasn't close, though.
No, it was not close. It was not close. And that wraps up. Not only do they win the Division III championship, Notre Dame went undefeated the entire season.
Like for the year?
For the year. The Pios went undefeated for the year, dude. For the year.
You know how you know you're good at something? When no one ever beats you. Like
the only thing, they had a couple games on their schedule that got canceled due to weather. Everything else, and I'm looking at the schedule, the games that they have on here, 13-1, 18-0,
right.
18-0, 15-0, 21-0, 14-0, 16-0.
I would like to find the run differential for this season.
So congratulations
yes.
to the Lady Pios. They had themselves a heck of a season. Undefeated regular season, number one overall seed, and then they just marched their happy selves all the way to the Division III state championship.
Well done. Well done. We'll make another stop on this. We got a little time here. I'm feeling froggy today. And you know
feeling
what?
Feeling froggy. My man's feeling froggy. All right.
And I want you to take us to a place that I personally don't think I've ever been. I can't say I've ever traveled to the lands of Avondale. So I'm going to need you to explain to me why I would want to go there.
You made it like Lord of the Rings. I love that.
Well, it reminds me of Arendelle, too, from Frozen. From Arendelle and the land.
Like, oh, God.
See where we're going here.
Yeah, yeah, too.
I'm going to let it go, and you tell me what's going on.
Tremendous. My daughter's listening right now. She's dying. Oh, man. All right. Well.
Avondale, by the way, if you didn't get it.
Yes, yes, yes. The Zurich Classic is in the books. And congratulations goes out to Ryan Palmer and John Rahm for winning.
I know one of those names. John Rahm.
Yes. He's the Spaniard with the German name.
Right.
As I like to refer to him as.
Starburst.
Because when he first broke through on the tour, I was like, oh, one of my people. German. One of my people. There's one of my people. And they're like, no, he's a Spaniard. I was like, what?
It's 2019, Raymond. Get with it.
Get with it. Raymond does not get with it. Ryan Palmer and John Rahm shot a 3-under-69 in the alternate shot final round of the Zurich Classic on Sunday and won the PGA Tour's only team event by 3 strokes over Sergio Garcia and Tommy Fleetwood. The victory was the 4th on the tour for the 42-year-old Palmer, but first in nearly a decade. His last win came at the 2010 Sony Open in Hawaii. The 24-year-old Rahm, meanwhile, won his 3rd PGA Tour title, won each in 3 straight seasons. He finished in the top 10 for the 7th time this year, including a tie for 9th at the Masters a couple of weeks earlier. The Palmer-Rahm combo finished with a 26-under-262 total at the TPC Louisiana there in Avondale, which had dried out considerably since heavy rains delayed the first round for more than 7 hours. So congratulations out to them, Ryan Palmer, John Rahm, for winning the Zurich Classic.
Urch! That is the car coming to a screeching halt here on this edition of Louisiana Wrap-Up. That was a fun one, though, man. We did baseball, we did fighting, we did softball, and we did golf. I tell you what, brother, that's not bad.
Thank you. Thank you. I try. I aim to please. I try. I try. I try. We're going to keep up the softball discussion, though. We talked a little bit about preps. By the way, Notre Dame's head coach scheduled to be in live in studio tomorrow.
Ooh, I hope he brings the trophy.
I'm hoping. I've requested that he brings the hardware.
Danny Broussard always brings his state championship.
That's
trophy.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
So we'll talk more about Notre Dame and the Lady Pios' sensational undefeated season and state championship. We'll have him in the studio to talk about that tomorrow, so make sure to look out for that. But we'll talk a little bit more softball when we get back here. UL, they just keep things rolling, chugging right along. Another series sweep. Best start. Best record. Most wins in Sun Belt Conference history for UL already.
Of all time.
And they still have a regular season series to go on the road. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Raging Cajuns, softball team. Well, they're really good, in case you were wondering.
Hot take.
Hot take. Hot take. Hot take. The Raging Cajuns are really good. They're a really good softball team.
it's hard to analyze a team that is playing like they are right now. It's like when the Astros or even the Cubs a few seasons ago when they went on that like 16 game winning streak or something, and when the team gets to like 12 wins in a row or so, it's like it starts to become hard to pick apart their games game by game. And I feel like the Cajuns have come to that point and then blew right past it. I mean, until they come up against another pitcher that is going to be, you know, top tier. I don't know what the Golden Spikes Award is in softball. I don't know what they call it. But until you come across a pitcher that is of that caliber, this UL team looks like the biggest struggle for them is going to be keeping themselves in games. And I don't think that's going to be a problem because Coach Glasgow seems to have them locked in.
They swept again another Sunbelt opponent, this time Coastal Carolina. It was senior weekend because the Raging Cajuns wrap up the regular season on the road at ULM with the three-game set next weekend before having to go out to the Sunbelt Conference Tournament in San Marcos, Texas. Now, they've already wrapped up the regular season title. We talked about that the previous week when Keely Milligan broke the single-season stolen base record and Summer Ellison surpassed 500 strikeouts. Yesterday, there at Lamson Park, great environment. It was senior day. Allison DeVille, the young lady from Port Barry, fifth-year senior.
That was cool.
She got the start. I wrote about her. You can read more about Allison on the 103.7 The Game blogs. Did a feature story on her. And
I didn't know anything about it, so that was really cool for me to check out because she commented, I believe, on the Twitter post about what you said about telling thank you for sharing her story. And I want to say thank you as well because I would not know this story if it wasn't. I'm sure people out there maybe have heard it before, but you got to go check it out. What this young lady has gone through just to be able to say she was a Raging Cajun is something impressive. So you got to check that out.
Yeah, she waited her turn. I mean, she sacrificed.
You know how easy she could have gone and left and put on a different jersey and gone play and gone Duke, and you know what I mean? But no, it meant that much to her to, as I believe the first line in your story says, to wear Louisiana across her chest.
Correct.
It was that important.
She watched Ashley Brignac pitch in person as a kid or as a teenager and said, that's where I want to go. And was willing to be redshirted and was willing to only pitch 10 innings over three seasons.
That chills, man.
And then this year she finally broke through and they've used her a lot as a relief pitcher. She got the start. Summer Ellison came in relief, got herself another victory because she's just racking those up. UL takes care of business. It was a closer game in the closeout game on Sunday there at Lamson Park. 3-2 win. And they come up big late. They were down 2-0. Coastal got on the board first by scoring two runs off of DeVille. Cassidy Smith hit her league-leading 14th home run of the season in the first, and then Chelsea Davilar sacrifice bunt in the second gave the Chanticleers a 2-0 lead. But then UL came back. Summer Ellison, she didn't give up a hit the rest of the way. She came into the second inning and pitched a no-hitter the remainder of the game. She would pitch 5 2/3 innings of work, not surrendering a single hit while striking out five. In the bottom of the second, Raina O'Neill put the Cajuns on the board with an RBI double, and Courtney Grimion later brought O'Neill home with a single inside the left field line. And then in the bottom of the sixth, Como, one of the handful of seniors, they only have four of them, Lexi Como dropped a single down the left field line, which was followed by a single through the left side of the infield by Alyssa Dalton. And then after a fielder's choice by Sarah Huddick, O'Neill hit a hard hit ball to Coastal Carolina second baseman Abby Montoya, who bobbled it, which allowed O'Neill to reach first and Dalton to cross home plate. That proved to be enough as UL picked up its school record 24th conference win of the season. Now, UL has finished another season undefeated in conference play. They went 18-0, I want to say, back in 2004. Back then, they didn't play as many conference games. But right now, they're 24-0 in Sun Belt play. They also have now won 23 straight contests. They'll close out the season with a three-game set at rival ULM next weekend. And Sunday was all about the seniors, Lexi Como, Allison DeVille, Kara Grimion, whose younger sister, Courtney, we already mentioned, and Keeley Milligan, the transfer in from Texas A&M, who has the stolen base record. They had themselves a tremendous day. They got to celebrate a little bit longer on the field. Lexi Como herself had to hold back tears because it was senior day, and they said she didn't expect to cry, but she says, yes, it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And look, for this team, once again, this season started with tragedy. This is a season that began with Coach Jerry Glasgow's daughter dying in an automobile accident. She was a volunteer coach. And this team has rallied around that, and here they are, ranked in the top 10, 46-4 overall, 24-0 in the Sun Belt. And they just look like they just keep rolling right along. Now, will they play again at Lampson Park? We do not know. Despite being ranked in the top 10, the RPI may prevent the Raging Cajuns from hosting a regional. That's still up in the air. We'll find more about that out as the week progresses and through next weekend. So we'll see if Sunday was in fact the last time the Raging Cajuns played in Lampson Park this season. When we come back, we'll talk to Jarrett Rozier. Tiger details right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Covered a lot of topics so far today. We focused in on the NFL draft, what the Saints did, how they shored up some positions by staying pat and then, you know, moving up a little bit in those middle rounds. They did a terrific job. We also talked about LSU, what they were able to do draft-wise. Surprisingly, only three guys drafted, but a ton of guys signing undrafted rookie free agent deals. And we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that with our next guest. He covers the LSU Tigers for TigerDetails.com. It's the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, man. I'm a little bit sunburned from the guys like yesterday after I started seeing everybody continue to head to Cleveland. I figure I better go hide out in the Jazz stuff before I end up getting shipped up there, too.
My man just threw shade at Cleveland. Starting off the week throwing shade at Cleveland.
Apparently, Freddie Kitchens, as many LSU guys as they're getting, still wants to throw a little shade LSU's way. So I figure tit for tat.
Let's talk a little bit about... We know Devin White was going to be a top 10 pick. He gets selected number 5 overall to Tampa Bay last Thursday night, Jarrett. But we had anticipated Greedy Williams to be taken late in the first round, maybe really early in the second. He actually went closer to the middle of the second round. What do you think happens there with Greedy, who a lot of people consider to be the best cover corner in this year's draft, not being selected until closer to the middle of the second round by the Cleveland Browns?
It was kind of a combination of things. I mean, you and I had talked last week. He started to slip in some people's minds. It looked like he was kind of losing some positioning within that cornerback group to a point where there were some questions whether he would make the first round. I mean, I said last Monday I thought he would still end up having a position late in that first round until it ends up being a pretty poor draft in terms of positioning for cornerbacks in general. You don't see any cornerbacks go off the board until DeAndre Baker at number 29, which is the lowest that the first cornerback has been drafted in an NFL draft since 1979. So going in, there were some questions about Greedy's, I guess, physical play and just not seeming like that was a strong suit for him than it was for some of the other corners. As fast as he is and as well, as much potential as he has to be a really good cover corner, he started losing some ground and then some things just don't go well for that cornerback position as a whole. And so as we got into the last 10 or 12 picks of that first round, and you still see Byron Murphy from Washington on the board, DeAndre Baker not going until 29, you started to realize that Greedy was going to fall a little bit. And talking to someone over the weekend who has kind of been on top of some of that and has a little bit of insight, the pre-draft process and a lack of meetings that Greedy had and all of those things, it does sound like hurt him too. But at that middle of the second round, pick number 46, ultimately Cleveland felt like they couldn't let him slide anymore because of all the potential that we have seen from him thus far.
And it is a good fit for him there, scheme-wise, what they want to do, first of all, Jared. And the other thing is that there's a lot of LSU guys there, right? And and it's a brotherhood that's making, apparently, Freddie Kitchens, first of all, first ballot name Hall of Fame. And second of all, that they want to do something. They're making it LSU North, but they like those guys. And even though he may be disappointed, he's going to have his chip on his shoulder. And he's going to have older Tigers there that are going to be like, hey, man, we got this. We're going to do something special here, right? So all things considered, he actually went to a good situation.
Yeah, and that's something that I think people lose sight of at times because we get so wrapped up in that draft position. And look, I mean, it's a big deal that Greedy slid to where he slid considering where he was once projected, because that's a big difference in money, particularly it's a big difference in guaranteed money. But you see guys get drafted higher to less favorable situations, and it really become a huge stumbling block for them early in their NFL careers. And guys that get drafted later and into the right situation and handle the situation well also on their part and end up being some of the best players in the draft. And so I think that's the biggest question mark now, or the biggest piece of advice when you look at a Greedy or anyone else who slid a little bit, or maybe even guys who went undrafted that have a lot of potential, is how do you handle this next step? How do you use that chip on your shoulder as fuel and not let it eat at you, but let it drive you to work harder and to continue to be great. And when you have a good support system in the franchise where you end up, that can be a huge make or break in terms of how you handle that aspect and really a lot of things, and just and what the outlook is for your career, particularly those early years as possible. You see it a lot with, and Greedy's not a guy that's gotten into a bunch of trouble, but you see it with guys that that have had issues and some character issues where if they end up in the right spot, if you're a Tyrann Mathieu with some question marks, but you can go end up having Patrick Peterson to kind of show you the way, that helps you that much more. And so for Greedy, just going up there and being with some guys that he's familiar with that can teach him how to be a pro and be a pro at a high level with some of the excitement around that organization at the moment, I think it works out pretty well for him all in all.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. You know, I give full credit to Gil Brandt because he tweeted this out yesterday, Jarrett, and he said, 15 players taken number one overall in the NFL draft are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. 16 who were never drafted are also in the Hall of Fame. 52 players that were drafted after round three are enshrined in Canton. You know, dreams don't end today. They only begin. And that's kind of the mantra a lot of these guys that went undrafted should have, because just because you didn't get drafted doesn't mean that you don't have a chance to make it in the NFL. Let's talk about the last guy, though, that LSU did have drafted, the lowest amount of guys drafted out of LSU since 2005, and that was Foster Moreau. He goes there in the fourth round with the 137th overall pick to the Oakland Raiders. I know with their new front office leadership, seeing him at the Senior Bowl and watching him progress through Senior Bowl and the Combine made a huge impression on them. What do you think about Foster's fit with the Raiders and what they want to do?
Yeah, I think the Raiders are going to be a pretty interesting team to watch here. I mean, they've been with the new regime there, and then the upcoming moves to Vegas and shipping Khalil Mack out 1 year, Antonio Brown in the next year. They have a lot of attention headed their way with folks eager to see just what the heck's going to go on. And you could see that they approached this draft that a lot of times people get wrapped up in the rankings they could put out from an ESPN or CBS Sports or whoever it may be. You could see Oakland kind of had their own mindset. You saw it from the beginning with Cleveland Farrell being their first selection and people kind of criticizing that. But they felt like they got a really good sense of the guys in the draft that they liked, and they trusted their evaluation, both physical skill sets and then just how they would fit into a locker room culture that they're trying to build moving forward. There's a lot of emphasis coming out of that organization on getting some leaders in this draft. And I think Foster, you've seen a lot of those aspects and heard him so heavily praised through the years that he'll be great in that regard. And then he didn't get a chance to show I think he showed his toughness and all of those things a lot this year, but he was only able to show kind of flashes of his pass catching ability because they needed his help in pass protection so much. And so I think some of the time between the end of the season and leading up to the draft, just that whole pre-draft process, he had a little bit more chance to show some of that with the Senior Bowl and some NFL folks, including the Raiders, could get a good look at some of the potential there. I think he has an opportunity to be a pretty good NFL tight end for a while. And I'm excited to see how quickly he can make an impact in Oakland, because I think he is going to have an opportunity to do so.
Jarrett, only three guys got drafted at LSU. Like I said, the lowest total since 2005, but a lot of guys did find themselves a home pretty quickly. John Battle, he signed with the New York Jets. Garrett Brumfield, the big fellow, the guard out of U High, he signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it took an extra day, but Nick Brossette, the running back out of U High, who you know very well and we had on the show on Friday, he signed with the New England Patriots. And on top of that, Jazz Ferguson, who started his career off at LSU, ended up as an All-American at Northwestern State. He's headed to the Seattle Seahawks. And Gerald Willis, the big D tackle out of Edna Carr that went to Miami, he's going to Baltimore. We do know this. We know that LSU's All-American kicker is getting a tryout with a couple of teams, one of them being the Saints. How long do you believe he will be a free agent?
Yeah, I think Cole's going to get an opportunity pretty quickly. Just the way the year that he had at LSU, I think, earned him a lot of respect, and also is a pretty big testament to his mentality and his ability to just go out there and do his job and not be overwhelmed by a situation, whether that be showing up at LSU from Assumption College or showing up at an NFL facility from LSU and from college, or an actual, game situation or kick situation. So I think he's going to have an opportunity to really latch on with one of these teams. I'm not, we'll see. I'm not sure whether it ends up being the Saints or not. I know there are a lot of teams with some question marks at that kicker position, more so than the Saints even this off season. So as exciting as it may be to think about him being added to the Saints, I think there are going to be a lot of teams that are interested in potentially having Cole Trace, and that he will not be out there on the market too long. And I'm interested to see exactly what that fit is, because just like we talked about Greedy, I think a lot of these undrafted free agents so far have already ended up in good situations. I like the situation for Jazz Ferguson up in Seattle, where it looks like they'll be without Doug Baldwin. I think if you're a guy on the defensive side of the football and in that defensive front, and like Gerald Willis, and you can end up in Baltimore. That's a pretty good situation. John Battle goes to join Jamal Adams. I think Pittsburgh's going to love Garrett Brumfield. And then Nick kind of knew the Patriots thing was in place Saturday, and so we were excited about that a little bit Saturday night, and he was saying he's excited to have an opportunity to go be a part of that backfield that uses a lot of running backs more often than not, and then has a chance to compete for championships.
What about Ed Alexander? Where do we stand with him?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with Ed, because he was probably at one point considered to be that next LSU guy that might hear his name called during those 3 days of NFL draft. And so as a lot of big defensive tackles were taken in that last round, I was eager to see if someone was going to take a chance on him. I'm not sure what his outlook is this week and who are some of the teams that are in contact with him. But when you are a big defensive tackle who has shown some success at a level of play like the SEC, that Ed Alexander has, certainly some teams are going to give him an opportunity. I think just some of the injury stuff really is a big question mark for him. And so he's going to have to look good in that regard as well. And hopefully he ends up finding himself a good fit as well.
Before we let you go, Jared, I want to ask you about recruiting. There's been some moving and shaking going on with LSU, especially for the 2020 class. So what kind of updates can you give us with that and where LSU stands with next year's class?
Yeah, so I guess the most recent addition was, right as that draft was winding down on Saturday, Rakeem Jarrett, the wide receiver from Maryland, ends up announcing that was one we were kind of waiting on a little bit, and that is a big addition for this class. A 6 foot, 195-pound, very explosive playmaking wide receiver that had not only LSU but Ohio State, Clemson, and some of these other big programs nationally very much involved in his recruitment. And I think for a lot of people, a bit of a surprise that he ends up announcing LSU on Saturday and doing so very vocally, seeming very passionate about the opportunity to join that program. And that was a huge get for the Tigers after a couple of out-of-state decommitments from that wide receiving core. So they're right back there, rivals. They've climbed up to the number one class in the country at the moment now with that Rakeem Jarrett addition. A lot of excitement continues for that 2020 class, as Ed Orgeron and company are really kind of blanketing the country. A lot of guys from coast to coast, as important as it is to hold down Louisiana and get top Louisiana prospects this year, more so than most years, you've seen LSU do a good job of being very involved in guys all over the country and really kind of make some national splashes.
Jared, brother, appreciate you making time for us. I'm glad you enjoyed yourself over the weekend, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you all. Y'all have a great week.
Jared Rosier, TigerDetails.com, breaking down LSU football with the NFL draft as well, giving us updates on recruiting. Recruiting never stops, Cody Shoots. Never stops. It's 24/7, 365. No holidays are taken off for recruiting, my friend. None. None, 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 none. When we come back here, we'll wrap up the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.
We're in the end game now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm Raymond Parts III. I'm your host, Cody Schutz is the producer, manning the ones and twos. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. So, Mr. Schutz.
Yes, Mr. Parch the Third.
It was a tremendous weekend. A lot going on. You had the boxing.
Right.
Championship boxing here at the Cajun Dome. You had UL baseball and UL softball going on with home series there at the Teague and at Lamson Park.
Right.
There was a lot to do. You had the Angola Prison Rodeo.
Right. You did that.
Which I did. I took a part in that on Saturday. Plenty to do.
Of course.
But you did none of those things.
Well, I did.
You built a pool. Had a crawfish bowl, but more importantly than anything else, you went to go see Avengers Endgame.
I was part of the Endgame. I have experienced the Endgame.
Over a billion dollar worldwide opening.
Tell you something crazy. When the movie ended, I finally was like, got back on Google and I was looking up a couple of things here and there. And I saw a story posted. This was at like 11 p.m. on Saturday night. I saw a story posted 9 hours prior to that. And the headline was Avengers Endgame breaks global box office opening weekend record. So the best-selling movie of all time ever in the entire world. And it broke the weekend record by like midday on Saturday. Like by like a little after lunchtime on Saturday, it had broke the global box office record.
Were you able to avoid all the spoilers?
As a matter of fact, I successfully avoided all the spoilers. I had one guy try to give me like a fake spoiler, but then he revealed to me. Well, he revealed to me that he's never seen any of the superhero movies ever, so he was just trolling, and I was like, fair enough. But yes, a great experience. No spoilers yet. You've got a couple of weeks here before I start making references to the movie. So, of course, for Raymond's sake, he'll go this weekend. But for everyone else, I'll wait a couple of weeks before the references start a flying. I will say this, though, Raymond.
I'm going midweek. We're going to try to do midweek.
I love you 3,000.
Oh, you love me 3,000? Oh, now I'm intrigued. Now I'm intrigued. Now I'm intrigued. Second hour is in the books on this Monday edition of RP3 and Company. Coming up, leading off the third hour from the LSU Radio Network, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, the one and only Jeff Palermo is going to be joining us to kick things off right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU's for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the face and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve it.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of this Monday edition of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is the man on the ones and twos, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. We led off the show talking about the NFL draft that wrapped up this past weekend. LSU players that took part in that. We dove a little bit deeper into that. And we also talked about LSU baseball getting out of Tuscaloosa with a series victory to keep pace with the rest of a crowded logjam atop the SEC standings, with Arkansas and Vandy leading the way, but then right behind them in third place is LSU, Ole Miss, Georgia, and Mississippi State. LSU returns to action this weekend, no midweek game, but returns to action this weekend with a key series against Ole Miss there at Alex Box Stadium. All three games will be broadcast live right here on 103.7 The Game. But we're going to talk more about the LSU baseball team with our good friend Jeff Palermo as we head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, Raymond. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, my friend. I'm doing well. So let's get right to it. A series win is a series win. 2 of 3 from Alabama. A lot more difficult than maybe I think a lot of Tiger fans anticipated it being. Probably even more difficult than some of the players anticipated it being. Your thoughts and reaction from the weekend series there in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, it really got off to a bad start with the loss on Friday, and really it just got off to a bad start when the team left on Thursday and Coach Palmieri announcing that Cole Henry would not be available to pitch because of elbow soreness, and that they actually, the plan was for Cole Henry to start game one of the series and become LSU's new Friday night starter and move Zach Hess back to the bullpen, a move that a lot of LSU fans have been clamoring for. But because of the injury to Cole Henry, which Palmieri says is not serious, but we'll probably get more details on that today when he meets with the media. Still, it just got off to a rough start, and then Zach Hess gives up 2 home runs in the first inning, and the Tigers were never able to recover. And those kind of losses that LSU has suffered this season, where they really do very little against a team that doesn't have a good record, do very little, especially offensively, I mean, that's, we've seen that a lot this year with losses to Northwestern State, McNeese, Southern, and then here's Alabama, a team that might not even make the SEC tournament, comes out in the first game and beats LSU 6-1. Now, granted, they had a veteran pitcher throwing, so it wasn't like they were going up against a bad pitcher, but they've had games like that. And then really on Saturday, they catch a break. They get a big call that goes their way with Zach Watson on a 3-run homer. It was originally ruled that it was fouled on the left field line. They take a look at it on instant replay and determine it went fair. And that 3-run homer was the difference there. And then yesterday, they had to hold on for dear life to win that game as Devin Fontenot made things interesting in the ninth inning. But they came away with a series victory. Again, disappointing game on Friday, and now I think the big thing is what is the health of Cole Henry? Because he has become the LSU's most dominating pitcher this season. And again, Maneri thinks it's something that it's not too serious. The MRI came back clean, but you never know with these things. There's been times where, you know, they've thought that injuries to Landon Marceau were not that serious, and he missed a couple of weeks. Jaden Hill, he's been out since February. So you just never know how these things, what will occur when these things pop up.
We're speaking with Jeff Palermo, part of the Louisiana Radio Network, as well as co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff, when LSU takes the field this weekend at Alex Box Stadium against Ole Miss, is Zach Hess part of the 3-day rotation?
Well, if Cole Henry's ready to go, I think he's not. I think Palmieri has just I think they look at it as, especially with the way Marceau threw yesterday. You know, Marceau got off to a shaky start, but he held it together and he ended up striking out 9 in 5 1/3 innings. And they thought enough of Marceau to put him as a starter when the season began on the weekends. I mean, he was the Saturday starter. So they like him. Eric Walker has come around. So I think they like the combination of Eric Walker, Cole Henry, and Landon Marceau. But if Cole Henry's still not healthy, they'll put Zach Hess back out there as your weekend starter. But, you know, the last couple of seasons, it just hasn't, for whatever reason, we see these flashes from Zach Hess. We saw it earlier this season when he threw 8 shutout innings against Georgia. He's had a couple of starts this season, but he's had more mediocre to below average starts than good starts on the season. And last year he had an ERA over 5, and this year, after 11 appearances and 10 starts, he's got an ERA of 4.65. So I just don't know how much you can just really depend on him. And he's given up 9 home runs in 50 1/3 innings. And I just don't know how much you really can depend on him as the Friday night starter. And I don't know if he's your answer at the back of the bullpen. You know, Fontenot has got 6 saves on the year, but he walks a lot of guys, and that's really been a problem that's, I think, plagued the entire bullpen for LSU, is just walking too many guys. But You know, Fontenot's ERA is over 3. That's not really what you're looking for out of your closer. Wittmeyer's ERA is closer to 4 than 3, so he's not really that role. Matt Beck, I mean, he's walked 19 hitters in 28 and 2/3 innings, so he's not your closer. Peterson, his ERA is 3.5. He's pitched well here lately, but I don't know. Maybe you put Zach Hess back in at that closer, and something clicks for the guy. But he's just not, and there's still a month or so left to go in the season. But I think if you look at Zach Hess's career here, it's just been flashes of really dominant pitching. But for the most part, it's been mediocre or sub-mediocre pitching for a guy that's there's been a lot of expectations tagged to him.
Jeff, are you surprised that we're about to enter the month of May and we still have questions concerning the LSU baseball team?
Well, I think injuries have been a big part of it. I mean, that's been – and now the latest here with Cole Henry. And what was kind of ironic about it was that you thought that they got past the injury bug until this thing with Cole Henry popped up with the elbow soreness. But if Cole Henry comes back, then this team is – about as healthy as you possibly can be. And then I would also say that yesterday, the starting lineup that they had out there, that's their best 9 offensively. I mean, they had Zach Watson, Josh Smith, Daniel Cabrera, Antoine Duplantis, DiGiacomo's a DH, Beloso, Chris Reed, Bruce Arden, Hughes, and Mathis all sat, and you had Gavin Dugas and Saul Garza hitting and or in the lineup. And Dugas got a big two-run single yesterday. That was huge. Saul Garza hit a second home run. He's got his batting average above 200 now. So I think they finally found the right combination that they want to go with offensively. Brant Broussard and Hal Hughes, they just don't hit enough to warrant a lot of playing time right now. Drew Bianco has shown signs of coming around with the bat, but he's another guy that's hitting below 200. So those 9 guys, I think if you're Pulmonary, I think you roll with those 9 guys, or maybe you insert Bianco here, and then you can always use Broussard and Hughes as late-inning defensive replacements. If they get Henry healthy, and if these 9 guys, if they find something here, maybe that might be enough. I've said it all season long, Raymond. The record doesn't look very impressive right now, 29-16, 13-8 in the SEC. But this is still a group of players that is talented enough that if it all comes together right around Memorial Day weekend for the SEC tournament and then lasts for another month, that they can get to Omaha and actually make a run in Omaha. I mean, it is still talented enough. It's just taken a while, partly because of injuries, partly because of slumps, for it to come together, and it still possibly can. But they're still really, I think to me, the biggest concern is with the lineup. Now, yesterday, they got the big hit from Dugas. They got the home run from Garza. When they beat Lamar, they got a big 3-run homer from Drew Bianco. They need the supporting cast. Just one of those guys to come away with a big hit to help out Zach Watson, Josh Smith, Daniel Cabrera, Antoine Duplantis, because he can't have it all on those 4 guys. They need a little help from some of these other supporting players. And if they get that and they get decent pitching like they did for the most part this weekend, this team could still make a really good run and have a postseason to remember.
Talking to Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff, I want to touch on the football team a little bit, in particular the draft. We knew Devin White was going to be a top 10 pick, and sure enough, there he was. He went to the team that he was projected to go to for months, the Tampa Bay Bucks, there at 5 overall. Greedy fell to the second round, which I found a little surprising, but then the draft kind of surprised me in general, because even though this is a passing league, there wasn't a lot of corners and wide receivers taken, barely any in the first round, and then they started making a run on them in the second round. What did you think of Greedy Williams falling to the second round like he did, and do you think the Cleveland Browns is a good fit for him?
I would say so, especially with Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry there. In particular, Jarvis Landry, because I think Jarvis Landry is a class act in the NFL and somebody that I would imagine he could help take under his wing. And you know, Cleveland is the expectations are growing. It seems like for the Cleveland Browns this season. I mean, he didn't do any pre-draft visits. He didn't do the 40 at the combine in Indianapolis. He didn't do a lot of the drills at his pro day at LSU. You know, there's this talk about him being too stiff or not a good tackler. I mean, there was just a lot of things that added up to him having the fall that he had. I think the biggest thing is not doing any pre-draft visits. I tweeted it out on Friday night right before he got drafted. I think the lesson we have learned here from Greedy Williams' fall in the NFL draft and Will Wade's suspension is that you go talk to your boss or your prospective bosses. You don't just not speak to them. I know in this day and age of text messaging and emailing, maybe we don't feel like personal face-to-face contact is not needed, but yes, it is still in this day and age. And I just think Greedy Williams turned off enough teams, but whoever was going to get him in the second round, and it turns out to be the Cleveland Browns, I think is getting a good player. And I don't think you know, Greedy Williams is going to be. I think he's a guy that can have a good career in the NFL. I don't know if it'll be great, but I think he can certainly have a good career in the NFL, and maybe this was a tough learning lesson for him.
Jeff, what did you think about where Foster Moreau goes? Fourth round, Oakland Raiders. They obviously were impressed by him from the Senior Bowl on with their new front office leadership. What did you think about Foster getting taken in the fourth round?
Well, I think that probably is a good fit for him. I mean, a team where it's in John Gruden, who other than the franchise is relocating, it's going to have stable leadership, or at least you think it will, with John Gruden and Mike Mayock there. He quarterback situation is a little questionable right now with Derek Carr, but he's used to that being at LSU. So I think that's a nice spot for him, and I think in the fourth round, that's pretty good for a guy who probably when you went into the 2018 season wasn't considered a draft pick, maybe an undrafted signee you would have thought of, but really improved, I thought, in his senior season. And he didn't get a chance to show his pass-catching ability as much as he probably wanted to, or as much as the coaching staff wanted to, because he needed to help out and protect the quarterback quite a bit. I think that's a good spot for him, and look forward to seeing what Foster can do in a career. Again, I don't think he's a guy that's going to be a Pro Bowl-type player, but we've seen this. Tight ends can hang around in the NFL for a long time. They can have an 8-, 9-, 10-year career and have a nice career and play for two or three different teams and, at times come up with big plays, clutch plays for teams. And so I envision that for Foster Moreau. And, you know, he's got the leadership quality to go with it as well, which is, I know, something that the Raiders really coveted.
We'll get you out of here with this, Jeff. It was estimated that over 600,000 fans showed up for the 3 days of the NFL draft in Nashville. 600,000 people showed up to take part in the draft festivities, brother. Did you ever think in a million years that you would see the NFL draft become such an event like it was this past weekend?
It was amazing. I mean, kudos to Nashville for what they did. The backdrop there and all the fans behind it. I mean, it was huge. And, you know, the NFL had a bit of a slump there with a couple years ago with the whole Colin Kaepernick thing and not standing for the national anthem. But I really thought the NFL made a huge resurgence this past year. I think a lot because of this new crop of quarterbacks that we have in the league that's, I think, bringing some excitement, a bit of a transition from the years of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Drew Brees, you know, dominating as quarterbacks. Now you got this new blood of QBs in there, and you're past the whole national anthem controversy. And But Nashville did it right. It's going to be hard, I think. And I know the NFL likes bidding this thing out now, much like a Super Bowl. And I don't know who's hosting it next year, if this was a two-year run for Nashville or what. But it's going to be hard for the NFL not to do it in Nashville next year because it was such a scene. And whoever does get a chance to host it again is going to have a hard time duplicating it. I would think the only city that can probably match that is New Orleans. I think you can find a spot somewhere and have that kind of excitement that you saw behind and all the fan bases there, that the cameras did a great job of always focusing in on whatever fan base was doing the pick. So it was great. It was fabulous. I mean, hats off to the NFL. I know they get criticized a lot for how they handle certain things, but this one was a perfect 10. It was pretty impressive, and I enjoyed watching it, and we'll see what happens next year. But, yeah, to have 600,000 fans there, that's crazy. But Nashville is a great town to visit. The weather's great at this time of the year, and I'd like to see New Orleans get its chance because I think they could duplicate what we saw this past weekend in Nashville.
Jeff, appreciate you coming on as always, brother. Enjoy the week, and hopefully get to see you out there at the box over the weekend.
All right, sounds good, Raymond.
That's Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Ag Radio, joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, Stros, they took a split, much needed. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a swimming pool, or a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
It is clubbed to left field. No doubt about it. Gone. Three-run homer. Robinson Chirinos.
The Houston Astros got themselves a split with the Cleveland Indians. Four-game series wrapped up yesterday. Stros took the game to even the series, get the split against a perennial playoff team in the American League.
We could see that series later on in the year.
You could see that, yeah, in the divisional round or even the American League Championship Series. Don't be surprised if that's the matchup that happens in the American League. So, look, you obviously always want to win the series. You know, you're not going to be happy with just settling for a split. But if you're the Stros, you have to be fairly pleased with the fact that you took a split because this is a very good quality ball club, the Cleveland Indians are. The Astros do improve with the 4-1 victory yesterday to 17-11 overall on the season. They've reclaimed the top spot in the AL West. So you get a split against a perennial playoff team that you're more than likely going to face again come postseason time, and you're back to being the number one team in the American League West. All in all, not too shabby. Not too shabby if you are, in fact, the Houston Astros. Could be a lot worse.
I mean, the Indians are no joke. So splitting a series at the beginning of the season, yeah, that's all good from this point of view.
Yeah, and once again, it's still early in the year, right? It's still early in the year. You still have plenty of time to kind of turn things around, so to speak. You don't want to just do a split. You want to be better than that. But, hey, you'll take what you get. Absolutely. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, We'll be talking to Bill Bender of the Sporting News. He'll give us his thoughts on the NFL draft right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. We let off the show talking about the NFL draft. 600,000 people showed up in Nashville to take part, just to be part of the draft. 600,000 folks. The draft extravaganza has come a long way since back in the day when it wasn't even televised. Long way. We dissected LSU only having three guys drafted, its lowest total since 2005. But now it's time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and get more of a national perspective about the draft. He is from the Sporting News. It's the one and only Bill Bender. Good morning, Bill. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing great. Appreciate you making some time for us. Have you recovered from the weekend? Have you got yourself some sleep and at least relaxed a little bit the last couple of days, man?
Yeah, we tried to a little bit, obviously. You know, it was a long weekend, like you said, a fun weekend, a lot of excitement. I thought it was a pretty interesting draft, but not until, you know, the Josh Rosen trade, there wasn't a ton of excitement. I mean, a couple flash picks, but a lot of those defensive linemen, it was just a case where a team picked the defensive lineman they liked.
I did find something interesting
early on that it was a big premium, you know, always quarterback, but it was a big premium on linemen, both offensive and defensive linemen and linebackers. That seemed to be the priority for nearly every NFL franchise heading into the early parts of the draft, and then they started focusing more on skill position guys in the second round moving forward, wide receiver, running back, and even cornerback. Were you surprised by that, or did that kind of go kind of according to script, so to speak, for you, Bill?
Well, yeah, I think most of it was the script. I mean, obviously the Raiders jumped off the page a little bit and took Cleveland Farrell, but, I mean, Cleveland Farrell could have a very productive career. I mean, he averaged 17 tackles for loss per season with the Tigers. He gets a lot of sacks. I think he's a guy that can get after it. I mean, Green Bay might have reached up a little bit or reached down, however you want to look at it, for Sean Gary. But all of these guys got something to prove. I thought Ed Oliver to the Bills was a good pick. And, you know, in general, that first round was full of a lot of defensive talent. And, you know, you had to be aggressive to get it. That was no more amplified than when Pittsburgh reached up to get Devin Bush at 10.
For you, Bill, what was kind of the biggest surprise? Let's start with the first round. What was your biggest surprise from the first round, either good or bad?
You know, I guess Cleveland Farrell would have been one. Obviously, the Daniel Jones thing. I mean, as you know, I'm based up here in Ohio, and I just can't add up why Dwayne Haskins would have fallen behind Daniel Jones. I mean, I know Daniel Jones, that's a guy that the Giants clearly liked, but Haskins is pretty good. And the worst part about that for the Giants is now they're going to have to play Haskins twice a year. And if they're wrong, it's not only going to fall on Gettleman, it's going to fall on the entire organization, especially when you have to play the other guy twice a year.
That was the big, you know, that was the big moment of the night for me was Jones being selected as high as he was and then Haskins falling down to the Redskins. That was a big surprise. How surprised were you of the Clemson players? You mentioned them. He got taken number 4 overall. A lot of people thought the other two guys of those, that trio of defensive linemen who were absolute studs, that the other guys may be a little bit better. Were you surprised that the Raiders took him and not one of the other guys?
Well, that's the value judgment those scouts are going to have to make, is when you have a defensive line that has all that talent, and they obviously do, with Farrell, Wilkins. I mean, Austin Bryant went a little bit later. Dexter Lawrence didn't miss the bowl game. And Wilkins was always the guy to me. That's the one I always heard was the guy. You know, he had done that for so many years. He'd kind of been the leader of that team. He's a little bit goofy, but in a good way. In a good way.
Right. Though.
And I think he was kind of the heart of that team. And it'll be interesting to see how all of them do. I know that's not a bad thing for Dabo Swinney to have three players taken in the top 20 at one skill position. And, I mean, if you look ahead to 2 years from now, even next year, you know, they're going to have guys like Simmons and Etienne and T. Higgins go. And then, of course, the following draft is going to be the ultimate PSA for the Clemson program when you have Justin Ross, Trevor Lawrence, and Xavier Thomas, and they could legitimately go 1, 2, 3 in that draft.
We're on with Bill Bender of the Sporting News. Bill, I know you're based in Ohio, but you have, you know, your connections throughout the entire United States. LSU only had three players selected in the draft, its lowest total since 2005. Were you surprised by that, and were you surprised that Greedy Williams fell as far as he did in the second round to the Cleveland Browns?
Well, a couple things. They had some guys stay in school, and that helped. I mean, they've got a lot of excitement around the program and what they've got coming back with Joe Burrow on offense and defense. It features Christian Fulton, a couple other guys. Grant Delpit, obviously. I mean, if you look at next year's mock, which I have up, I mean, Grant, I think he's a top 10 pick. Some other people might disagree. I think he's just one of those safeties that'll really continue to improve and as it gets ready for the next level. But, yeah, I mean, Devin White's top five pick. That doesn't hurt. I thought Greedy, it was interesting because I did not expect six other corners to get taken ahead of him, or seven. I think it was six or seven. And but he does land in a spot with the Browns, with OBJ and Jarvis Landry. They can certainly mentor him as another also LSU guys. And sometimes, as you know, it's not so bad to fall in that spot because you can play with that chip on your shoulder and try to prove people wrong.
We're talking to Bill Bender of the Sporting News. Bill, obviously first round in the books, heavy, heavy on the O-line and D-line. Second round came, more of an emphasis on wide receivers. There was a run on them, also a run on cornerbacks. Your takeaways from rounds 2 and 3, what surprised you, and what do you think was the overlying storyline of the second day of the NFL draft there in Nashville?
Well, I mean, Denver got Drew Lock. That was huge. I thought DK Metcalf slid down the board a little bit. New England, through 2 days, that's what I think they were kind of the story of the entire draft. You look at a New England draft, and they just get guys, and you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, for them to get Chase Winovich, a guy that's going to be an edge rusher. They added a tackle. They added offensive line help. A little bit later, they got Jarrett Stidham. I mean, Joel Williams, a guy from Vanderbilt at corner, they get him too. So, I mean, the Patriots just do this every year where I always say their guys look a little bit better after they draft them because that's what they're good at.
It was like back in the day, anytime Coach K and Duke was recruiting a player and the guy might have been a 3-star, and then all of a sudden Duke started recruiting him, all of a sudden he becomes like a 5-star and a blue chip prospect and a McDonald's All-American. The way how New England attacks, mm-hmm. The way New England attacks the draft. Bill, I have to ask you, because obviously this is Saints country, they make their move. They didn't have a lot of picks. They stood firm. They didn't trade up into the first round on Thursday. The second round, though, they make their move. They trade up 14 spots to get the center out of Texas A&M, which appears to be Max Unger's replacement. A lot of folks think Eric McCoy out of A&M is a plug-and-play starter. Your thoughts on McCoy and the pick by the Saints?
Yeah, McCoy's a guy that you know, when we do, I do those All-American lists for us, Sporting News. I have help, obviously, but you know, I always have like a watch list, and he was always on that fringe all year. And I think, like you said, with Unger being out, they needed to find a replacement. I think he can be that guy. Texas A&M had a really good draft in general. They've had a bunch of guys taken, and they're just getting started with Jimbo. He's going to recruit some teams that he's recruiting well, and they're going to continue to have that 4- and 5-star talent roll through there. So that's a good sign for their program. But, yeah, I thought that was a good pick. Sometimes you got to be patient when you're traded out. And I know you know, the Saints have all the pieces, basically, to go do what they did last year and do it again and maybe finish this time and maybe not get we don't have to get into the call or anything, but I think they'll be just as talented and just capable of reaching the Super Bowl.
A lot of people say, Bill, that the final rounds, a lot of the, like, Lewis Riddick and other guys that are former front office personnel, they say really the foundation of your team is the people that you pick, the individuals that you select, third round, fourth, fifth, sixth round. A lot of these guys are going to make up your special teams units. A lot of these guys are going to provide backups. And sometimes you go to diamond in the rough, but a lot of the essential foundation of your franchise comes in those later rounds. Third day of the draft, rounds four through seven. What stood out to you about that?
Yeah, I mean, same. I would agree with that. There was, you know, there wasn't anything too flashy on the back half of the draft. But, I mean, you look at our draft grades, the Jets did well. The Jets did, you know, grab some good picks late. I thought Green Bay, they grabbed the A&M tight end, Jay Sternberger. They had an excellent draft, building for depth. People like to question taking a kicker. Well, the Buccaneers drafted another kicker in the fourth round. That was interesting. But I think, you know, it was a little bit of the rich got richer, though, with, you know, New England. I thought Cleveland, for not having a first-round pick and trading for OBJ, they did solid. You know, they get Mack Wilson, a linebacker from Alabama, that I thought was one of the better players in the country when he was playing there. So a lot of, yeah, like those kind of things you watch. Cincinnati, they added to their offensive line with Michael Jordan and cleaned up a couple running backs late. So it's all about adding that depth, like Lewis Riddick says, and very interesting to see.
Bill, we'll wrap it up with this. A lot of guys, though, their careers begin without being drafted. Silver LSU players, Nick Brissett, gets signed by the Patriots. Garrett Brumfield, the big hoss on the offensive line, goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So a lot of these guys go undrafted, but they still have an opportunity to make a name for themselves. Of the guys that went undrafted that signed their free agent deals, who kind of stood out to you? That you were surprised maybe didn't get drafted and that you think possibly has a chance to stick in the league with their team that they signed with?
Johnny Dixon from Ohio State should have been drafted, and that would have tied Alabama, you know, for most players selected. So he'll get a chance at the next level. Caron Higdon with the Texans, a Michigan running back. I mean, he is a one-cut runner, but I think his toughness, his ability to pass block is a – the ability to catch the football out of the backfield. He'll get his chance. You mentioned Brissett. There's another guy. And, again, that's what the preseason's for. Once you get into sixth, seventh round, some of those guys already are lined up as free agent deals anyway. So I think watching those guys kind of and see how they do at the next level. I did think it was striking the number of underclassmen who entered the draft who didn't get drafted, and that's something that, you know, eventually could be an issue with the NCAA. A guy like Tyree Jackson of Buffalo, the quarterback, doesn't get drafted. So what does he do now? I mean, either they need to have a way to better advise these players or you know, maybe a way like basketball does where they let some of these guys go back to school.
Bill, appreciate you taking some time for us. I'm going to assume that you're going to have some time off here, brother. You're going to spend the rest of the week relaxing, sure, not having to worry about being part of 600,000 people there in Nashville. You're just going to stay low, so to speak?
I'm going to jump on the Blue Jackets bandwagon this week to cover a couple hockey games for us. So that should be a fun little change of pace, and we'll get after it.
Well, Bill, appreciate you making some time for us, brother. Enjoy the hockey, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much. Take care.
Bill Bender from the Sporting News, breaking down the draft for us here on RP3 in Company. When we come back, it's time to wrap up the show already. That went by quick.
I've got an idea, Raymond.
Oh, Cody Schutz has an idea. It's Monday, which means it's a good idea. He hasn't been worn out by the week.
You know what? That's a fair point, because this is actually, you're going to be shocked, it's a actually relatively decent idea, and it has to do with sports and only sports. So this is going to be weird.
I can't wait. Well, we'll wrap things up here with RP3 and Company right after this break on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Look, the draft is in the books. 600,000 folks showed up in Nashville to watch the draft, which is mind-blowing.
It is. So I figured we would wrap the show today by sack race followed by tic-tac-toe, and then we'll do one lap around the building. First one back here wins.
It's going to be you. Let's just start there. Let's just start there. Let's start and end there. Who's going to win that? Cody Schutz.
It was the lap around the building that got you, huh? You were in it. You were in it until the lap around the building.
Yeah,
right?
Until that wrap around the building.
Sack race and tic-tac-toe. We can do that. But, yeah, you're right. You're right. No, we had a different idea, Raymond. I shall let you continue. I just I wanted to be dumb.
Look, the New Orleans Saints made the best of their situation. We talked about it to start off the show. They get Eric McCoy, trade up 14 spots in the second round on Friday, get the center out of Texas A&M, Max Unger's replacement, a plug and play type of player. They also get some depth in the defensive secondary with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson selected in the fourth round out of Florida, the safety. He's very versatile. And then they got special teams guys, scout guys there with Saquon Hampton, the safety out of Rutgers in the sixth round, Elise Mack, tight end out of Notre Dame in the seventh, and Caden Ellis, the linebacker out of Idaho in the seventh as well. But that's not what it's all about. Look, the Saints, especially under Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, do an excellent job of finding guys that are undrafted, signing in as undrafted rookie free agents, and developing them into key players for this franchise. And they were busy as soon as the draft was over. Extremely busy. So we're going to give you a little bit of a taste of what the Saints did with the undrafted rookie free agents.
Now, this order, I believe, is just the order in which they were reported in, not necessarily the order in which the Saints reached out to these guys.
Courtesy of Saints Wire.
Right. So the order Ray is going to give you here, and these are just the way it came in down the Twitter pipeline there, not necessarily the Saints. Who knows who they reached out to first?
That is correct. So they locked up an offensive lineman out of Florida State, Derek Kelly. Kelly started all of Florida State's offensive line over the years as injuries and poor play forced the unit to shuffle around. So he's played guard, he's played tackle, he's played everything. His most prominent appearances, though, were at left tackle and left guard.
I like a guy on the left side of the line.
You can't have especially with the injury issues that the Saints have had at the tackle positions in recent years, adding depth is a necessity. They also got another tight end. You thought Elise Mack from Notre Dame may be that young guy. What about Jake Powell out of Monmouth? That's right. That was per the official Monmouth Twitter account.
Look out.
Hey, Monmouth. Monmouth got excited about having a tweet about the draft.
6'6", NFL. 6'6", ain't a joke.
6'6", 230-pound tight end who wasn't, we've heard this before, often deployed as a receiver, catching just 54 balls in 3 years. But he turned those targets into 641 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Not bad.
Not bad. They also added D-line help. Corbin
Kalfusi.
Kalfusi out of BYU, 6'9", 275-pound pass rusher.
Big boy.
Who had 13.5 sacks and 16 tackles for a loss the last 2 years. They also added a nose tackle in Kenny Bigelow. I doubt he's related to Bam Bam. Out of West Virginia.
Or Deuce.
6'4", 310-pound traditional kind of nose tackle. Also got another D-tackle, Shy Tuttle. Tennessee Volunteer.
I like that. SEC defensive lineman.
That's right. Could help fill a need. We know that they have depth issues across the D-line, and in particular at D-tackle, nose tackle. They also added some skill position guys as well, Cody. Little Jordan Humphrey.
Lil Jordan Humphrey. He's just the name of the draft award. Lil Jordan.
From the Texas Longhorns, wide receiver. Had a terrific junior season, 86 catches for almost 1,200 yards and 9 touchdowns. He's 6'3.5", 210 pounds, but he's a little bit slow. Only ran a 4.75 40, but hey, big possession receiver. The Saints love guys that can catch the ball.
They do.
Also, they added Darnell Holland out of Kennesaw State, a running back. Another running back, a Divine Ozabigo from Nebraska.
That's how I would say it.
Thank you. And then another Deonte Harris out of Assumption College wide receiver.
Assumption College, Cole Tracy.
That's right. Plus a long snapper and a couple other guys.
There's a defensive end in there from Wyoming, a couple of offensive linemen as well.
We also know that LSU All-American, Cole Tracy, confirmed via the Advocate that he's trying out with the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints.
Go get him, kid.
Go get him. That kid deserves to at least be in a training camp.
He
does. One of the best college kickers I've ever seen. So, hell, if Tampa Bay can keep drafting kickers, you think Cole Tracy could get a job somewhere. Just saying. Terrific Monday edition. Great way to start off the week here for RP3 and Company. I want to thank all of our guests, Jarrett Rozier, Jeff Palermo, and Bill Bender. Make sure to tune in tomorrow. We'll have Dale Seri, Notre Dame head softball coach, in studio right here on 103.7 The Game.